Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
It's Sunday, December the 13th. Welcome to the Kudzu Vine. This is Tim Shiflett. David has a family outing tonight, and he can't be with us, but I hope Catherine just phoned in. Is that you, Catherine?
I did. I've been trying to get in for like 15 minutes.
Yeah, it's
some technical problems.
It's the miracle of modern technology once again. Anyway, welcome. I'm certainly glad that you're here.
I was worried. I was like, yeah. Come on, I can't leave Tim hanging there all by himself tonight.
I've got a big mouth, but I don't know if I could talk for an hour by myself. But anyway, we're glad you're here. We were also supposed to have with us, and I hope this is her.
I think that's her.
Hey,
hello, Papa, how are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you so much for having me today. I'm excited.
Did you have any trouble calling in?
I did.
Yeah, so did I.
Yeah, so did I, and I'm the host of this thing tonight. But anyway, we're all here now. We're ready to do a big show. Also tonight, in a few minutes, we will welcome two guests who will be talking to us about politics in the great state of Kentucky. And while we're waiting, we'll discuss some of the political news from around the country. But before we do that, Papa, for those of our listeners who have not heard you before, even though you've been on with us, why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is you're doing?
Well, first of all, let me just tell you, I'm excited to be back on the show. I always love listening to Kudzu Vine, and you all certainly keep the topics of conversation exciting. My name is Anastasia Apa, and for about the past 10 years, I've been traveling the country and running races for Democrats. I'm a political campaign manager and fundraiser. I learned pretty early on that if there was no money, there was nothing to manage, and so focusing on fundraising, and I'm currently either managing or general consulting on three federal races right now.
Okay, and David has told me that you prefer to go by APA, is that correct?
I do. I believe in keeping it short and simple, and people have always had an easier time calling me APA rather than Anastasia, so I do go by my last name, yes, sir.
And by the way, Anastasia is a beautiful name, even though I botch it with my southern twang there. Okay, anyway, where I'd like to begin tonight is in a fun place. Of course, that would be South Carolina. Now, we've talked about the situation with Governor Sanford a lot on the show, and just when we think we've exhausted it, it just seems like week to week this story gets new life. Now, two things have happened there this week. First of all, a South Carolina House Judiciary Subcommittee, heavily Republican, I might add, voted by a 6-1 vote against impeaching the governor, which really surprised me. Then they voted to censure him instead. If that wasn't enough, on the heels of that, later in the week, the governor's wife, Jenny Sanford, filed for divorce from her husband. So it looks like the governor may get to serve out his term, such as it is, but while he is serving out his term, we're going to add to that a messy and a very public divorce, unfortunately. Now, Catherine, you have said, and correctly, that this gift just keeps on giving, and well, here we are again. What do you make of all of this?
I think that this is a perfect opportunity for a new talk show. I've been thinking about this all day. I think that Jenny Richardson and Carol, is her name Carol? Richard, Jenny Sanford and Carol Richardson, the ex-wife of Glenn Richardson from Georgia, should start a little talk show about Southern politics. Because I think it could be very interesting. They've both got quite the story to tell, I think. Well, you know, I'm always sad when marriages break up, especially when there's children involved. It's always sad, and it's going to be very hard because it's going to be, I'm sure, very public. And, you know, it doesn't look like Jenny Sanford did anything wrong. She was, you know, a very supportive wife, very political wife, and so I'm sure it's going to be a tough time for that family, even Governor Sanford. The one question I have is, you know, does this mean he's going to be taking weekends off to go to Argentina, or, you know, what's going to be going on with that? But, again, I am always sad when families break up. I really am. And especially around the holidays, it'll be hard on those children. And they're not young, at least that makes it a little bit easier, maybe.
Yeah. And Appa, if you weren't aware of what was going on in Georgia, I don't know if you've been following the situation
I think everyone knows.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, that's always nice. You know, Georgia, we're always on the map for some, you know, ridiculous Republican shenanigans.
And right now it just seems that the Republican Party in this state, which was so dominant just, what, 2 or 3 weeks ago, Catherine, is suddenly thrown into a quandary, a vacuum of leadership, charges, countercharges, guys, legislators hollering, let's introduce bills about morality and this and that and the other, and it's just gone crazy here. But Abby, you have worked in a lot of campaigns, you've seen all kinds of candidates and office holders. Let me ask you, a guy like Governor Sanford, who was thought of as a future national leader, is he finished for good in politics?
I think no one's ever really finished for good in politics. The amazing thing about politics, especially Southern politics, is that voters really can forgive you. And so I think he's really doing things in the right way. I mean, his approach has just been, I think, good. He's in trouble. He's let himself get in trouble. He's making apologies. Now he wants to reconcile with his wife. He said that publicly. What woman doesn't love to see another man want his wife back? I think he's going to get some points with voters there. And in addition to that, I think nationally what we're seeing, whether it's political figures or sports figures, we're seeing the American public very clearly sending a message that says, hey, we want to make sure that our people who we look up to, our role models in society, are doing the right thing in their personal lives as well as their professional lives. I think there's important messages to learn there. Is he done forever? I don't know. I think we have to kind of continue to watch here. I don't think he's going to quit. So I think he's got some fight in him, and I think he can survive this.
Well, you know, I'm old enough, and let me betray my age just a bit here. I'm old enough to remember Richard Nixon coming out in front of the cameras after he lost the governorship of California in 1962, and said, you guys won't have Dick Nixon to kick around anymore. 6 years later, he was president, albeit a totally different set of circumstances mm-hmm. that resurrected his career. And I wonder if voters on a national level don't have a little weariness with all of this. I mean, because so much of it has gone on. I mean, we've had U.S. senators playing footsies with cops in the bathroom, and we've had members of the congressional leadership chasing around teenage male pages, and we've had a guy down in Louisiana hoarding away $90,000 in his freezer, and this thing with Richardson in Georgia, it just goes on and on and on. And the question is, for either one of you, when will the voters just finally rebel?
Well, Well, I think at least in Georgia, I think they already have begun to rebel by not voting. And I think that's the biggest, probably the saddest result of some of this stuff. You know, I can't remember what our turnout was in 2008, but in 2009 for the mayoral elections in Atlanta, for the general election, the turnout was 24%. So I think that that is a I think some of that is a commentary on just like, you know, they're all a bunch of crooks, you know, who cares? I think that we all understand that we're all humans and we all have human failings, but I think that some of this stuff is just I think in Glenn Richardson's case, I think it's an abuse of power, and I think we are short-sighted to not pay more attention to the fact that that much of the stuff that he did was an abuse of power, and that should never be tolerated by any voter or by the rest of the legislature. But I don't know when they're gonna. I don't know when the voting. You know, when people are gonna say, okay, I want to vote for a good guy. I don't know. And who are the good guys that are gonna run? That's the other problem. You know, we got to run people that aren't so tempted, I guess.
I think the bad news here is that lots of good guys become bad guys while they're in office. I think the other thing that we can kind of see here is that, I mean, for example, let's go back to Louisiana too, with Congressman Bill Jefferson finding $90,000 in his refrigerator. This is a guy who still beat out his opponent in the Democratic primary and then went on to lose the district to a Republican. There hadn't been a Republican in office before that since 1891. So, I mean, I think we have voters showing us over and over that they're confused. They're not sure. They like regular people, but they also care about having leaders with value. And as a Democrat, I can't help but see the opportunity for the situation in Atlanta, because what we really need to do at this point is, in Georgia, we need to have the Democratic Party and the Democratic operatives on the ground there to organize themselves and use these opportunities to make sure that, just like Republicans would do to Democrats, that we're pushing these messages home. This is what this party sits on. The Republican Party, they tout their morality. Okay, well, we have a little faux pas here. Let's do something as a Democratic Party to take advantage of the fact that they're not doing what they said they would do. And I think that's kind of the important message here, is what are we going to do as a party to make sure we bring attention to reverse what my colleague here just talked about with voters feeling disenfranchised and not wanting to go to the polls. How can we turn this around as a party and get people to vote because of what's happening?
Okay, let's look at that.
I just want to say one more thing that we can't really go unremarked, is that we also have a lot of really great people in our state legislators, and our national Congress and Senate. A lot of really good people serving us very well. I'm really fortunate that I have John Lewis as my congressman, and as much as we sometimes don't like Johnny Isaacson, he does do good things on occasion. So, you know, I think it's dangerous to say, oh, they're all a bunch of crooks, because they're not. You know, there are a lot of people who have been serving for a long time or for a short time who are very, very good public servants. In fact, there's probably more of those than they are of the crooks. It's just that because of the our you know, nature, we tend to focus on those who are on the failings instead of the successes. And I think that's unfortunate.
I don't disagree with you at all. I think that there are plenty of good legislators, legislators across the country. I totally agree with that. But I think at this point we're talking about the bad guys. You know, the good guys are doing good things.
Absolutely, but we can't. I think that sometimes we all tend to forget that there are a lot of good ones that are serving very well, and that, you know, our country is still, you know, a great, you know, beacon of democracy, apparently.
picked up on something a while ago that I want to come back to. You mentioned the ramifications might involve the voters just simply turning to the other party in the involved area. In this case, we're going to talk about the governor of South Carolina and saying, okay, let's give the other side a chance because we're disgusted by this. And it's funny you should mention that because there's a brand new poll out from Public Policy Polling up there in South Carolina. It's a fellow by the name of Jim Rex running for the Democratic nomination up there for governor. If he is the nominee, then the polling is showing that this race is essentially pretty much a toss-up against any Republican. Now, this is a very red state. Why is it so close? Is it Sanford that is causing this?
It may be. I mean, you don't know if it's that issue. It could be an economic issue. I think all across the country we're seeing voters just searching and hoping and wanting different. They want more jobs. They want to have access to affordable and accessible health care. They want to make sure that they have the best quality education available for their children. They want to live in safer communities with, you know, better infrastructure. And so whether or not we're seeing a direct effect of some of the immorality happening from our legislators, I think kind of the bigger issues right now that are focusing voters, that voters' minds are focused on, I should say, are just those kitchen cabinet issues that we talk about year after year after year. The situation hasn't gotten better yet. We've seen some effects of the stimulus package, but not enough yet. And so I think it's going to be a very exciting election cycle because we're gonna see some things I don't think we've ever seen from voters. And I think that, you know, hard times call for different kinds of votes, if that makes any sense.
Are you saying that perhaps incumbents, whatever their political affiliation, better look out?
I think incumbents, yeah. Look, I think that one of the big problems that we're going to have as a party this year, Democratic Party, is making sure that we retain those whopping amount of seats that we picked up in the 2008 cycle. 2010, incumbents are definitely having to hold on to their seats because everybody marched into office on a message of change, and voters expected that change to be a little more immediate than it has been. And I definitely feel like that incumbents are vulnerable, and just like they were in 08, but as Republicans. So this year, it's really the burden falls on the backs of the Democrats this year to prove what we've done, how we're different, what change we've brought, and how we're going to continue to improve the lives of the voters that they represent.
Oh, okay. And when we're talking about that election and getting out our base of voters, polling has been showing that perhaps the voters next year are going to be older, whiter, more conservative. And two groups that heavily supported Barack Obama's election, the young and the African Americans, may not come out in sufficient numbers to help Democrats across the country because Barack Obama is not at the head of the ticket. What do y'all make of that?
I definitely think we're going to have a problem getting out youth and minority voters. I tell people all the time what we saw happen with Obama never happened before and, frankly, will never happen again. Unless we had some amazing organization happening at the national level, unless Obama made it his duty to send people back out there to activate those voters, I don't think that we're going to see them. Again, the burden falls on the backs of Democrats. I honestly believe that as a party, we can do more to find commonality between our base voters. African-American voters care about the same things that our older, whiter voters care about. They, especially when you look at issues of morality and virtue, our African-American base, especially our older African-American base and our female African-American base, which is what you see is more female African-American voters than anything else, really do care about issues of morality. You know, men who are faithful to their wives. They care about men leaders who can show that they support mentorship programs. And so as a Democrat, as a Democratic operative, I just can't help but see the opportunity in some of the things that are some of the misfortunes that the Republican Party is facing. And in addition to that, I can't help but see the opportunity in our party using this time right now to start, energizing our base and making sure that we're sharing these messages with them and we're showing them what's been going wrong on the other side and why we need to stay where we are. And I really want to see Democrats do the job this year of proving why us being in has been better for people.
Okay, Catherine, you just went through a race in Atlanta in which you just said, and we know that the turnout was, anemic to say the least. Yet last year, the metro Atlanta area turnout was so heavy that Barack Obama almost carried the state of Georgia. Mm. What happened to voter interest this year down there?
Well, I think, the interesting thing is that in our runoff, we had more voters than in our general for the Atlanta race, which is very, very odd, and I think everyone's still sort of surprised by that. I think that one of the problems is that it's related to what APA is saying, is that we came out of the November 2008 elections high on this great voter turnout and this, incredibly talented, articulate, inspiring new president, thinking that we've got it now. And I think that if I've learned anything in my more years than I want to say interest in activism and politics, is that you can never do that. You have to constantly be working. You have to constantly be reaching out to the voters, reaching out to the public, and reaching out to your activist participants, and making sure that they're, carrying the message of the Democratic Party across their communities, in their schools, in their workplaces, everywhere. And I think that the Democratic Party here, in certainly in my county, and I believe across the state, and I take some responsibility for that as a member of the state committee, I think we rested on our laurels after the 2008 election, and I think we'll probably pay for that in 2010. I think we saw some of the results of that in the Atlanta municipal elections, because not very many people voted. I mean, we succeeded. We prevailed ultimately, but that was pretty easy. It's Atlanta, really, the fact that we did have this runoff it's nonpartisan, but we did have a runoff that was by all evaluations, Republican against a Democrat. And to have a runoff in Atlanta like that, of that shape, was very unusual. So I think we just, we get lazy. I think that there's no better example of that than the post-Clinton years. I think we all enjoyed the fruits of the Clinton presidency without recognizing that we had to continue to work, and that's why we got 8 years of George Bush.
Don't remind me.
Do you disagree with me about that? I mean, I certainly I was that person. I was that person who said, everything's great, the economy's strong, we got a great, president. I mean, he wasn't my favorite president. He had some, he was a more conservative than I am, but he was still, inspiring, well-liked around the world, and I think we all got lazy. And then when Max Cleland lost, I was like, uh-oh. We're in trouble.
We were all lazy in 2002. We were. I agree that I was one of those that was complacent. After all my lifetime of seeing the Democrats in charge of this state and of this being a one-party state, I was very complacent. And when the end came here, it came in a hurry. And I think now the Republicans are beginning in this state to make many of the same mistakes that the Democrats did when they were in power.
Well, I think the Republicans are better
at being the opposition party, and I think the Democrats are better as the party in power. And now that the roles are reversed, everybody's out of whack. That's what I think.
Yeah, Republicans have always been better as bomb throwers, as rock throwers. They've always. But speaking of next year's election, before our guests join us here in a few minutes, let's jump to one of those races next year. APA, Louisiana is a state, obviously, that you know quite well. Now, on this show, we have discussed Senator Bitter shenanigans, shall we call them, quite a bit. And I have personally wondered why his poll numbers have not been affected by his personal life more. What's the deal there?
Let me tell you one thing that I've learned in Louisiana, and I wish I had as much experience as you think I have. It's one of the states I've just started working in, so I have less experience there than I do in other states like Florida and Tennessee and Alabama. But I think one of the things that we've learned over and over again, we just can't say this enough, is voters are forgiving. I mean, their congressman in Louisiana, too, got caught with $90,000 in his refrigerator, but they just couldn't elect anyone else. I mean, this is a district that is 75% safe Democrat, but they just couldn't. They just couldn't vote against him in the Democratic primary. People love him, especially in Louisiana and in the Deep South. We find our voters to be very, very committed to the people that they elect to office. They like to see someone mess up and say they're sorry. They want to give them another chance. And if no one effectively makes the argument that we should not give this person another chance and that we should not bring them back in, then sometimes you have situations like the one we see with Vitter. And I think in Louisiana, maybe more than other places, New Orleans in Louisiana is just one of those. I mean, every time I go to a state or a city and I arrive and a candidate goes, it's very, very different here. And I go, yeah. but when I got to Louisiana, I felt a real difference. Life in Louisiana, life in New Orleans, and how it affects its politics is very, very different. These are very connected, parochial, sweet, caring, sharing, forgiving, God-fearing people. And I believe they want to give their guy another chance. They just don't want to throw him away yet.
I see. But, Catherine, let's compare that to Georgia. like I mentioned earlier, in the last couple of weeks, we have witnessed the Georgia Republican Party coming almost unraveled over this same sort of thing. Is it different here? Am I imagining that?
Well, I think we'll know better in a couple weeks when the legislature begins and when they, you know, have a vote for the new speaker and see how the. I mean, I don't know if we'll be able to tell, but we'll see in 2010 how forgiving we are here in Georgia. I have to say, a lot of that's going to depend on how many feet we have on the ground for the Democratic Party and how many people we have running against some of these guys and in some of these seats. You know, is somebody going to run against Burkholder? Is somebody, you know, who's going to run for Glenn Richardson's seat? Are we going to have a Democrat that's out there, you know, talking about Democrats? And it's not enough to talk about what's wrong with the Democrats, what's wrong with the Republicans. We have to talk about what's good about the Democrats. And I think we spend a lot of time talking about what's wrong with the Republicans and not enough time talking about what's good about being a Democrat and voting for a Democrat.
And on that note, I believe at least one of our guests is on with us. Hello, who do we have with us?
Hi, this is Clint Hardy from Kentuckiana Grassroots Radio.
Hello, Clint. How are you doing tonight? We'd like to welcome you from the great state of Kentucky. And from your show, Kentucky Grassroots. This is Tim Shiflett that you're talking to, and we certainly appreciate you being on with us tonight to talk a little Kentucky politics.
You're welcome.
And I believe your co-host is also with us. Is this Matt?
This is Matt Singleton. How are we doing?
Hello, Matt, and we'd like to welcome both of you gentlemen to the Kudzu Vine. Now, what we always like to do, we like to start out with our guests by asking them a little bit about their backgrounds for the benefit of our listeners. So if one or both of you would like to tell us how you two guys happened to get together and how your show came into being and how it evolved into a Kentucky political show, we'd appreciate it.
Matt, you can go ahead and start.
All right, Clint. Basically, I had a my name is Matt Singleton. I'm about I just turned 30, and I had a I'm a minister. I'm an ordained minister, and I had a religious / political show called Bible Smack Radio. And
I
love basically,
that.
Yeah, kind of like, you know, your Bible thumper, you know, have Bible Smack, you know, laying the smack now. So anyhow, we had that show going, and then I started to get a lot of grassroots political activists on my show. And Clint was actually one of my many guests. And essentially what happened was I started noticing that I wasn't going to get mainstream guests as far as, like, you know, high political people and stuff like that. And, you know, I started kind of seeing that this is kind of go towards local politics. And then I started thinking, you know what, that's a really good idea, because most of the power that's being held right now starts at the bottom and not at the top. You know, if you want
to
wait 4 years for the presidential election, you know, you're not going to have any effect. So I had a buddy named Dave Codwell. I met this fella at kind of like getting ready for the Tea Party movement. And I met him, and he started saying, you know, hey, why don't we kind of get something like this together? And, you know, it'd be one of the first conservative political shows in our area. And so I started kind of playing with the idea. I brought it up at a group that Clint's part of called Take Back Louisville, and everybody liked the idea. So as we just started getting things together, things evolved from there, and it's really gone steadily upwards. It's not really, you know, there may have been some disappointments here and there, but generally it's just moved forward the whole time.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Clint Hardy. Basically, I'm just a little bit younger than Matt. I'm 29. I've been involved in independent and conservative politics basically since I was 14. And we pretty much got tired of the local media here and the state media not covering all views, whether it be independent or liberal or conservative. So we thought it was time that people who actually wanted to solve problems got a voice in our community. Whether it be Metro Louisville or Kentucky or Indiana, and that's pretty much the other part of why we started our radio show on Block Talk Radio.
And how long has your show been on now?
Since June of 2009.
11.
So roughly June 11th. Right.
And it's a weekly show, is that correct?
It's on Mondays and Thursday nights from 6:30 to 8 o'clock Eastern Time.
And, of course, being that you're talking Kentucky politics, right now at least, Kentucky is one of the most interesting states from a political standpoint in the country. Especially, this has been true in your upcoming U.S. Senate race. Could one of you jump in now and tell us about the present state of that race since Senator Bunning announced that he was not going to seek re-election?
Well, right. I can fill that in. Let me go back a little bit. Pretty much what happened is Senator Mitch McConnell and some of the party leadership, not necessarily rank and file of the Republican Party in Kentucky, decided that some of the comments that Bunning has made over the years regarding Justice Ginsburg, for example, about the cancer situation, that
mm-hmm.
He no longer needed to be senator in this state, so his fundraising dried up. So it went in two different directions as far as the Republican Party went. One, the more establishment candidate, Trey Grayson, and more of the rank and file and not just Republican but independent type candidate, Dr. Rand Paul from Bowling Green. And pretty much how the race is shaped up is you have two major contenders on the Republican side and two major contenders on the Democrat side. But Bunning pretty much was pushed out of the race by Mitch McConnell and people who he works with.
What was the thought there, gentlemen, that if Senator Bunning stayed in the race as the Republican nominee that he would surely lose next year?
Well, let me kind of jump in, because I think one thing that I noticed as time developed was, you know, we noticed, like, you know, the two big bailout scandals. The first was, you know, the TARP money and stuff, the $800 billion bailout under Bush, and then, of course, the $760 billion bailout under Obama. Both Republicans voted against Obama's stimulus package. But what was ironic to me was that Mitch McConnell voted for the $800 billion stimulus package, and then Jim Bunning did not vote for that stimulus package. And a lot of conservatives took notice. I remember him on the Mike Gallagher show, for instance, and they, you know, singing his praises and stuff like that about, you know, the fact that he, you know, had the integrity to do what he did. And so Mitch McConnell, what's funny is that for the most part he votes conservatively, but there is a sense in which, like, in local politics, you find that he has held an iron-tight grip on the political Republican machine in Kentucky, kind of like a conservative Ted Kennedy is in Massachusetts. But there's a lot of power that he has exerted, and a lot of people have complained about this over the years. So it was kind of interesting, because here was Bunning kind of going out, and they were saying, like, well, like, Bunning's not raising enough money. Well, some of his normal contributors are now not contributing to him for some, you know, unforeseen reason. Maybe Clint has a clue on why this is, but these contributions were going towards men like Trey Grayson, and originally they had a fella, David Williamson, who was, you know, touted as to be Mitch McConnell's preferred choice, and nobody liked that choice, and so he quickly switched over to our current Secretary of State, Trey Grayson.
Let me kind of fill in the gaps, if I could. One, David Williams is the Republican president of the Senate. He was the original candidate that Mitch McConnell wanted, from party insiders wanted, and then once it didn't seem like the party establishment nor the rank and file wanted him to run, he dropped out, and Trey Grayson, which is the current Kentucky Secretary of State, showed up. Bunning's financial situation either went to Trey Grayson, the traditional donors, or went to more of the rank and file, or the independent, went to Dr. Rand Paul of Bowling Green, which is the son of Congressman Ron Paul of Texas.
Okay, I want to ask you one more question about this Senate race, and then I'm going to pass it off to our two co-hosts for some more questions. And that's about Rand Paul. Is he evoking the type of interest at the grassroots level that his father did on a national level up there?
I think he's actually getting more mainstream Republican support than his father did. His father, in my opinion, ran more of a libertarian campaign. And his son is running more of a traditional Republican campaign of less taxes, balance the budget. The Republicans under Bush basically weren't conservatives in a lot of ways, that they were big government conservatives, and that by the Iraq War, for example, we never should have gone into Iraq, more of a rank-and-file type view of the Republican Party versus a more let's go to war with every country as possible and expand the war state.
Yeah, I think
what you see with
Dr. Rand Paul is that his father was is a 20-year congressman, and he's pretty well established within Washington D.C. and basically kind of more free to kind of exercise certain views, and at the same time he's very much similar to his father's image. Though I mean, he won't go to some of the statements that can be kind of considered radical on anti-war, and yet also he does disagree with the war in Iraq, for instance. And then he also has very strong words against the Federal Reserve and the IRS and things of that nature. So he's really kind of a little bit more more of a clean cut version of his father, not quick to go with the what we call more sensational statements. But
I know exactly what you mean. Gentlemen, as I mentioned a moment ago, we also have with us two other hosts, Catherine and Appa, and I'm going to turn it over to them now for some more questions, and I'll start with you, Catherine.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks, guys, for being on. We really appreciate it. We know it's the holidays and a lot of demands on all of our time, so we appreciate you being on here tonight, especially being on here with all of us Democrats. we really do appreciate that.
Right.
I just wonder what kind of it sounds like you have some organizations up there in Louisville, and what kind of activities do you do beyond you said you have this grassroots radio show, and so are you trying to mobilize voters, and how are you doing that, and how is it working out for you?
Matt?
Clint, you got this one.
Okay. All right, I'll take this one. Pretty much the way we're working is we wanted to have an outlet once again for the grassroots, people who basically weren't getting on TV, weren't getting on the radio. Since then, there have been some AM talk shows, some FM talk shows come up. And like I said, it's not just Metro Louisville, but pretty much it's independents and conservatives that have come together and are pretty much sick of the Democrats, the Republicans, the politics as usual. Most of the people in, say, the Campaign for Liberty or the 9/12 movement or Take Back Kentucky or some of these other groups that are up here, whether it be in southern Indiana or Metro Louisville or some other part of the Kentucky, is more about conservative values and helping people through the private sector than it is actually getting behind one political party and supporting carte blanche candidates across the board.
We've had a range from Blue Dog Democrats, Libertarians, Constitution Party, regular Republicans, mainstream Republicans. They've all been able to kind of have their voice in our show, and our philosophy is to kind of do a positive format. In other words, if you come on our show and there's an issue which we think, hey, you got something that's kind of going in a good direction, we want you to basically give your views and your opinions and stuff. And, we might every now and again, disagree or something. But in general, the first priority is to make sure that you have a voice. And we want to, use that to help other people get that voice and get moving. And people can make up their own minds. We also, a little bit of our time we spend on local charities and stuff like that, local ministries. We really do want to, we feel that a conservative direction would help put our city in a better state. But more specifically, we just want our city in a better state. So, anything that has a positive contribution, we want to be a part of. And we also try to, the way I felt about, for instance, the Libertarian Party, I don't mind a third party, but I'd like to see them do more than just, oh, well, we had a presidential candidate. It's like, what are you actually doing in our community? And so, we try to kind of go at it with that idea of, you know, let's all start kind of going in momentum and stuff like that, because a lot of the ideas are really not as far apart as we think.
Oh, I agree with that completely. I think that we all have much more in common than we have than we differ on. I think that as Americans, we all probably share values more than we disagree. I think that's true. I think we spend a lot of time talking about the ways we disagree, but I think generally.
Yeah.
Appa, you want to ask a question?
Yeah, let me just piggyback off of you there. I think that you guys just made it was kind of a quiet moment, but I think you guys just said something that's profound and big, and it's something that I hear a lot of smart people talk about all the time, which is that in America, we really we have two parties, and everybody in the middle feels left out. And a country like America, where we're all about inclusion, I think it becomes more and more important every year, every cycle, to have platforms like your all's radio show. And I applaud you for what you're doing. I think you're ahead of your time, because I'm probably gonna get some heat for this, but I feel less and less and less like a Democrat every day, and not because I don't agree with the values, but because I just feel like we're more alike than we are different. And one of the things I try to do when I'm formalizing Get Out the Vote programs or bring together messaging or whatever is finding commonalities across ethnicity and racial lines and lines of income. Because I think we are alike, and we're all in it together, that's for sure. We're sitting in the same boat, so we might as well get along. My question is, I'm very, very focused on the federal races this year, the 2010 cycle. Tell me what you all think is going to be the biggest surprise and what you think may be the biggest disappointment this election cycle in Kentucky.
Matt, do you want to take this first?
Okay. I think that, like, you know, in something you kind of mentioned about commonality, I think one of the issues is that, you know, what we're doing with our show is that, you know, we can get a good, interesting debate out of our differences, but you're not actually going to make a lot of progress if you're not focusing on your commonalities to actually get some action going. And, you know, sometimes we need to, you know, step outside the box and say, you know, like, this fella agrees with me on this issue. Maybe we ought to, you know, kind of band together on that, even though we're totally different in other places. But with the election and stuff, I do feel like the Senate race between Rand Paul and Trey Grayson is very intriguing in itself, because, you know, behind Trey you have Mitch McConnell, which is, you know, the minority leader, you know, and then behind Rand you have his father, Ron Paul, who has this, you know, vibrant new movement into the Republican Party that's making a lot of waves. And so essentially there's a lot of symbolic power struggle there. So I definitely think that it's definitely a very intriguing race, you know, for that alone. Being part of, like, the Republican GOP conventions in Louisville and Kentucky, you really saw some of that last year. There was, like, an all-out kind of a battle there between powers and egos and stuff like that. Obviously, the mainstream at that point was, like, you know, outnumbering, you know, some of the new Campaign for Liberty type of people 3-1. But still, it was pretty tense, and it kind of shows a shift in the GOP. I think that generally, you know, the way I see it is that if we keep momentum, like, in this next year, everything's going to go to the right. And when I say that, not simply Republican, that'll be the surprise, is that, you know, what you're going to see is you're going to see some more blue dogs and some more independents step out there, and suddenly there will be a lot of those that are kind of moving to what we call the right, or at least what we call constitutional. That's one of the biggest issues, is that I think America is starting to get nervous about the idea that the Constitution is being stepped on. And so that'll be a big deal, but it's going to be hard to say just how much third-party influence there is, because the Republicans and the Democrats have been very clever and devious in making a lot of laws that make it hard for third parties.
Okay, what I was going to mention was more of actual races. In the 3rd Congressional District, at this point, incumbent Democrat John Yarmuth looks like he's going to win, but there are 4 Republicans running against him at this point. The way John Yarmuth is handling himself in the town halls and here pretty much not paying attention even to some of the people in his own party, I see the Republicans narrowly picking that up in the general election. In the 6th District race, which is the other Democrat race, I believe Ben Chandler is going to hold on to that seat. In the U.S. Senate race, this is coming out of WHS 11, which is a local ABC affiliate, and Survey USA. If the election was held today, Daniel Mongiardo, which is the current lieutenant governor, which is a doctor, he used to be in the Kentucky State Senate, and the current Attorney General, Democrat Jack Conway, if the election were held today, as far as the primary goes, Jack Conway would narrowly win that election, going by polls and by people I've talked to. And in the Republican race, it would probably come down to the undecideds, but it would look like Rand would probably win by about 1 or 2 percentage points. If it was held today.
Rand has actually made a lot of gigantic strides by, and maybe this is like through the power of the internet or different things on the local level, but he has raised, you know, well over $1 million. Clint, do you have statistics on that?
The figures at this point is Rand has raised about $100,000 more than Trey Grayson, and he's ahead by about 3 percentage points in the polls. What's going to matter in this race, I think more than anything else, is going to be 3 things. 1, grassroots network, grassroots get-out-the-vote efforts for the Republican primary, radio and TV ads, and 3, this fourth quarter fundraising totals if Rand is ahead or pretty close to Trey, he's going to maintain that lead. The question remains in the fall, if it comes down to Jack Conway and Rand Paul or Trey Grayson, who will win? And at this point, like I said, the election's too far out for 2010, but if it were held today, I believe the Republicans would retain the seat.
But I am just stunned to hear that Rand Paul might actually defeat what is perceived as the establishment candidate, Trey Grayson. I'm just almost speechless when you gave me those figures. That would be a surprise. But now I want to ask you a final question before you leave us. If anyone listening tonight has decided that they'd love to hear more of you, or if someone listening in the Louisville metro area, the southern Indiana area, would like to contact you in any way, how could they do that?
All right. Well, like I think first is obviously you check out our show, number one, and that is at blogtalkradio.com/ KY-grassroots-radio. And then I established an email. It looks like it's just mine, but it's actually the show's email. I've got another one. It's called kymattsingleton@yahoo.com. That's our email address to email us. I think we've got different things as far as like we have a Facebook, a buddy of mine put it up, so I put his name on it, Dennis Gore, KGR. So if you're big on Facebook, you can look up that one. But, yeah, essentially, we're definitely ready for anyone who would like to get in contact with us. And I guess it would be okay. I'll go ahead and give you my cell phone. 502-744-3555.
And last thing I wanted to mention is we're also on Twitter. If you go to our main page on Blog Talk Radio, you can find us there. Or you can just do a search on Google or Yahoo or MSN. Just put in Kentucky Grassroots Radio, and we'll show up in the first probably 30 searches.
Well, gentlemen, we would love to thank you for both being with us tonight. It has been very enlightening, especially about Rand Paul. I'm just stunned. And anyway, we hope that as the election progresses next year, that you'll come back and share with us some more about Kentucky politics.
Yeah, we'd love to.
Definitely.
Okay, thanks. Thank you for being with us, and good night.
Good night.
Okay. Well, we got about 5 minutes left in the show. And so what I want to do is turn our attention to one more story. Senator David Adelman of the 42nd District down there in Decatur has been nominated to be our new ambassador to Singapore. That means there will be a special election for the open seat. And one of the candidates is Jason Carter. He's the first one of President Carter's grandchildren to run for office. I saw Jason speak a couple of years ago in Rome, and a very energetic young fella. Catherine, how will the president's grandson do in that metro district?
Well, I had the pleasure of seeing Jason the other night at a holiday party, and he's certainly an excellent candidate, an excellent example of a working Democrat. As you, our listeners may or may not know, he's the co-founder of the organization Democrats Work, which is a grassroots organization that sponsors work projects in communities across the country, primarily right now in California, Arkansas, and Georgia. But he's a really great guy. As of right now, there's no one running against him. A lot will depend on the timing of the of David Adelman's ambassadorship. They expect that to happen sometime in January, and then Governor Perdue will have to call for a special election within 60 days or some, you know, whatever the rules are. I think he has a very good shot at it, especially if he's the only Democrat running. It's a highly Democratic district. He's a very, like you said, he's very energetic, very smart. He served in the Peace Corps. He's got a really sort of holistic approach to politics. He understands the importance of fundraising, but he also understands the importance of boots on the ground and how important it is to convey the Democratic message. I think he'll be a wonderful public servant, and I certainly wish him the very best in his pursuit of this office. I think he's getting a lot of really good support around the metro area. He's certainly got a good network of friends and family to help him. There is actually people are saying that being Jimmy Carter's grandson might hurt him. I don't understand how that could be, but
well, I was going to jump in with that. Appa, as a legacy, he has a heavy load to bear. Obviously, if you were working in his campaign, how would you advise him to handle that?
Well, I think the good news here is that he doesn't have to piggyback very much off of the Carter name. He's made a name for himself, as Catherine said. He's been very active in Democratic politics and has done a lot to help and strengthen the Democratic Party. I think he's in a unique position. I mean, this is a man who can stand on his own 2 feet. And if I was his campaign manager or if I was a member of his team, the first thing I would do is make sure I spent time defining who he is and set him separate from his family. I think there's value to the legacy. And I think that will help him with his name recognition. But the first rule of war is always define yourself and then define those around you. And so I think he's in a good position to be able to very clearly to say and show and prove that he's his own man with his own set of goals and his own set of accomplishments.
I heard that he said the other night I'm Jason Carter. I'm not Jimmy Carter. He's my grandfather. He's not me.
Well, anyway, with that, the clock on the wall tells me that we're out of time. Appa, thanks for being with us tonight, and come back anytime.
Well, I certainly want to thank you, and Kath and I so enjoyed co-hosting with you. You're just dynamic and amazing, and I hope
thank
to
you.
Bump into you one day.
Yeah, and happy holidays to everybody.
And Matt and Clint, if you're listening, thanks for being with us, guys. And this is one Democrat that's going to check out your show. David will return next week. Good night, Catherine. And to our listeners, talk at you next week on the Kudzu Vine.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Good night.